Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For many months, The Exchange has covered the politics of the midterm elections. We've hosted forums, we've interviewed the candidates, and we've examined their policy positions. Now, with Election Day tomorrow, we set politics aside to focus on the process of voting, the nuts and bolts of what you need to know before you go to the polls. So let's get your questions in now. If you're uncertain about registration, party affiliation, documentation, we'll do our best to clarify or direct you to where you can find the answers. So join us right now. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guest is NHPR's Casey McDermott, and we'll bring in other voices throughout the hour. Casey, thank you so much for helping us out today. I know it's a really busy time for you, so thanks for being here.
No, this is an important topic. I'm happy to be here.
What's the biggest question you've been hearing from Granite State voters this year, Casey?
So I think it really depends on what voters you're talking to, but I think one of the bigger questions that many people have had is, you know, what is all of this that I've been hearing about these new voter laws? Because, of course, they've been kind of in the news, people who may even be just paying cursory attention to the news in New Hampshire over the last few years have probably heard a lot about either, you know, changes to residency requirements or changes to registration requirements. So I think there is maybe a little bit of confusion around what rules are in effect this year, what they actually mean, what they actually will change about the registration process. And I will just plug once, probably of many times this hour, our voting guide online at nhpr.org. But for the sake of just explanation of those kind of the big laws that people may be hearing about, there are two of them. So one of them is Senate Bill 3 that passed in 2017. And basically, it changes some of the forms and the process around registering to vote for new voters. It doesn't substantially change what you actually need to register.
In terms of documentation.
Exactly. People have always needed to or been asked to prove that they live where they're trying to vote. This adds some steps to the process, but even if you don't have the forms when you show up on Election Day, that doesn't mean that you are turned away. There are other alternate methods to make sure that you can still register to vote if you are legally qualified. On the other hand, there's this other one that people may be hearing about called HB 1264. And what's important to know about that is that it's not in effect for Tuesday's elections.
So don't worry about
exactly. That. That one changes some of the definitions around basically the residency statute in New Hampshire. So that one will, if all stays the same, be in effect for future elections, but not for tomorrow.
That's the big domicile discussion
exactly.
We've been having?
Yep.
Okay, so that's not in
effect. Just put that out of mind okay. For tomorrow's elections.
Keep it simple. So SB 3, is this its first run then in an election?
It's not its first run, actually. It's its first big run. So basically, it went into effect about a year ago. And almost immediately after it went into effect, a pair of lawsuits were filed against it from people who had concerns that it would make it harder on certain groups of people, in particular young adults, people who move around a lot, people who may have housing insecurity and may have trouble having the documentation to, you know, just prove that they have a stable address. So basically, there were a pair of lawsuits that were filed. And shortly after those lawsuits were first filed, actually on the day of a special election last year, a judge said that the state needed to stop enforcing any penalties associated with that law.
I remember that, sure.
So, basically, you're still going to be asked to do the things that SB 3 asks people to do in terms of, you know, reading a form, you know, signing that you understand the language on there and you understand the requirements. But if for some reason you don't have the right kind of paperwork when you register to vote or you don't return within a certain deadline, which is one of the requirements of SB 3 that, you know, if I show up at my poll, I don't have the right paperwork. At that time, SB 3 asks you to come back at a later date with that paperwork. If you don't come back with that paperwork, right now the state has been ordered by the court not to punish you for that. So that's another thing that's important to know. But basically, the law has been in effect for about a year, but mostly in smaller elections. So either in legislative special elections and the municipal elections or in the state primary, you know,
sure.
about 2 months ago.
So this is its first big run,
big run, yeah.
Well, and you talked to a lot of poll workers who've mm-hmm. been really focusing on this. Down in Derry, you spoke to a lot of people who have worked, at the polls for a long, long time. Let's hear from one of them talking about SB 3. This is Judy Strakalaitis. She's chair of supervisors of the checklist in Derry. She's held that position for 9 years, and she's concerned that SB 3 might discourage people from registering. Let's hear.
And people get so caught up in what documents can they bring. We just generally tell people, bring whatever you have, and it's our job to know what's sufficient and what you need. And if not, there's an affidavit to fill out. And so I like that New Hampshire has that law. But I think SB 3 makes it sound much too confusing. And if you were a young person that moved around a lot, you wouldn't probably change your license every time, just as a practical matter, because it costs money.
Again, that is Judy Strakalaitis. She's chair supervisor of the checklist in Derry. What has the state said, Casey, about, you know, just confusion?
So the state has said they've really leaned in more recently in court and publicly that SB 3 does not change the actual substance of the requirements to register to vote. As we said, you always needed to satisfy or be able to satisfy, you know, certain requirements to register to vote in New Hampshire. This changes the steps that are taken to make sure that you actually do meet those requirements, basically, is kind of a simple way to put it. And the state has said, too, that, you know, per a court order, people who, for whatever reason, don't have that paperwork when they show up to the polls will not be turned away if they are a legally eligible voter in New Hampshire. So that means that if you live in New Hampshire and you believe it to be your home for voting purposes and you haven't voted in any other place in this election, absentee or in person, then, you know, you are legally qualified as long as you meet all of the other requirements to vote in New Hampshire.
Well, Attorney General Gordon McDonald last week held a news conference on how he and the Secretary of State's office plan to ensure a smooth election. Let's hear a little bit from that.
By way of overview, our efforts on Tuesday will have three basic components. First, we'll be deploying attorneys, investigators, and staff statewide. Second, we'll be running an Election Day hotline. And third, we're going to have a team of attorneys ready to respond to issues as they arise.
Again, that's Attorney General Gordon McDonald talking about his office's plans for a smooth election day. Today in The Exchange, we are taking your basic questions about the process of voting. So join us now with your comments and questions, 1-800-892-6477. Or send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. So Casey, here's an email from Kyle, and we got this question a lot last week. So Kyle, thank you so much. Kyle says, I've never voted before and never registered before, but come tomorrow, New Hampshire still has same day registration. So I should be able to vote, right? Kyle, thank you very much. And Casey, go ahead.
So New Hampshire does have election day registration or same day registration, as it is sometimes called. So that means that if for whatever reason, you know, you're tuning in right now and you're saying, oh man, I totally forgot that the election was tomorrow, but I want to vote, you can still show up to your polling place and register again as long as you are legally qualified to vote in New Hampshire. So what that means is that you can show up. And basically the way that I would explain it to people is that if you want your voter registration process to be as simple as possible, I do think that most people would advise making sure that you have some kind of documentation with you when you go to the polls. It's not required. There are other ways around it, and there are forms that you can sign that are legal affidavits swearing that you are eligible, swearing that you are who you say you are, if you don't have your license, if you don't have other things that the state asks people to bring with them. But for the sake of, again, making the process as smooth as possible for you, it generally is advised that you bring, a proof of your identity, a proof that you live where you say you live. And one thing that I would point out is that the Secretary of State's office has told local election officials that they can also accept electronic proof proof. So if you are, for example, a college student who's going to your polling place to register, you can pull up on your phone in some towns, you know, your housing portal for your on-campus housing address. And in some cases, they've said that that will be enough to satisfy that you live in the place that you're trying to vote.
All right. Well, I'm really glad he asked that question because it's one we got a lot last week. So to clear that up, yes, we still have same-day registration.
Tomorrow.
And listening to all the interviews you've done with supervisors, Casey, one of them said, just bring whatever. Just bring as much documentation as you can think of. And it's up to us to sort out what you need.
Yeah, and I think that goes to something that has been kind of a common theme with a lot of the local election workers that I've talked to, is that a lot of these people really want to help voters. It's people who often are working for little or no pay, who've signed up to volunteer in their communities to really help their neighbors exercise their right to vote. So those are the people that will greet you if you are showing up to register at the polls tomorrow. And I think in many cases, they are interested in making sure that, again, legally eligible voters are able to vote and exercise that constitutional right. So they can help walk people through questions that they might have.
Let's go back to our listeners. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Today in The Exchange, we're answering your questions about voting in tomorrow's midterm elections. Again, you can join us 1-800-892-6477. And Casey, Holly's calling in from where? Hi, Holly. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
I just realized this when I heard your intro about what the show was about. I had a name change over the summer and was divorced. And my license reflects my maiden name now, but I haven't done anything at my polling place, so I'm not sure what documentation I need to bring to prove to them that I am the person that they have on their roster.
Oh, wow, Holly. I'm guessing that's not uncommon, Casey.
Probably not. And this is a little bit of a different kind of context, but one resource that may be of use that we've reported on last week was a set of questions and answers that the ACLU of New Hampshire put together for transgender and gender nonconforming residents who also run into similar questions when they go about the process of changing their names or transitioning. And I would point this person to maybe the Q&As there, but also would emphasize that there are forms that are at the polling place that are available for people to sign. And this is, you know, this is a legal form. You sign it under penalty of perjury if you're lying, that if you lack, for example, in this case, an up-to-date license or up-to-date form of proof of identity, but you are who you say you are and you're not trying to break the law.
Even though that last name has changed.
Exactly. You can sign a form at your polling place saying, I am who I say I am.
So as long as you're, you know, all square with that,
yes,
you should be fine.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's a great question, Holly, and one probably that a lot of people have. Here's a question from Jackie at Citizens Count, and this relates to another question we've received a lot from our listeners, Casey. Jackie says, you are absolutely allowed to bring your notes with you into the voting booth. This is not a pop quiz, kids. We encourage folks to use the Citizens Count website to look up information on their candidates right down through the State House and Senate levels, then bring that with them into the voting booth so they can make an informed choice on their ballot. We also have the information available via our mobile app, the Citizens Count New Hampshire Voter Guide, which they can load onto their phone and use while voting. We also have a link to that on our website. So if you're thinking, wait, what was that? Citizens Count what? Just go to nhpr.org/exchange and we'll have it there. But Jackie, thank you so much. We've gotten a lot of questions from our listeners too, Casey. Can I bring a sample ballot in? Can I bring notes in from, you know, that article I read in the paper? And go ahead. What about that?
Yep. You can, as they said, you can bring that into the voting booth. New Hampshire is also a place where, you know, per another kind of court battle, which is, I think, often the case with high-profile election laws here. You can also bring your cell phone into the voting booth, and
right.
you can take a ballot selfie if you want, if you are so inclined. But you can bring resources in there to help you, you know, remember people's names. Obviously, in New Hampshire, we have a lot of candidates to keep track of, given the size of our state legislature and all of the other kind of local offices that are on the ballot. So if that helps you to remember who you want to vote for or the issues that are important to you, then that's something that's allowed.
Sure. And some of the local names, as you said, aren't that familiar. Mm-hmm. And so I myself sometimes will put a little scrap of paper mm-hmm. in my pocket and, you know, who is that person mm-hmm. that my friend told me about? So thank you so much for that that comment. And let's go to Mike in Hooksett. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. No, I was just listening in, and when the person you have on there, just if people just remember four things that the supervisors need to, you know, to prove out. One is age, second is identity, third is citizenship, and fourth is domicile. So I didn't hear citizenship mentioned. That's one that people often forget. They can sign the affidavit, but it's a lot easier for everybody if they've got a copy of their birth certificate or a copy of the citizenship. If they're first-time New Hampshire voters, if they're already in the system, the supervisors can look up and see that they've already proved citizenship in the other towns.
Sure. And it sounds like you work at the polls, Mike.
I had. I've been a supervisor for a number of years. I'm not currently, but I, you know, still assist in the polls. It's something I enjoy doing.
Yeah. What are you anticipating for tomorrow, Mike?
I think it's going to be busy based on everything I've heard. And I know that everyone in the polls works to make it as smooth and efficient as they can, both in the parking lots and also in the polls. So if people just come, you know, expecting there'll be a crowd, be patient and be friendly.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in, Mike. It's good to hear from you, especially since you work at the polls. Go ahead, Casey.
Yeah, and I think thank you, Mike, for making sure to emphasize that it's not just domicile, even though that's what we hear a lot about, and it's not just identity that New Hampshire asks people to prove when they register. It's identity, age, citizenship, and domicile. So basically that means that you have to be who you say you are. You have to be at least 18 years old. You have to be a U.S. citizen, and you have to live in the place that you're trying to vote. And again, I also appreciate Mike pointing out that, you know, while the state does ask people to be able to prove, for example, that they are a citizen, that does not mean that you necessarily have to have naturalization papers or a birth certificate or a passport with you at the polls, because in some cases those are difficult for people to dig up.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm imagining young people, especially
yeah.
myself included,
yeah.
you know, when I was sort of first going out on my own, those types of really important mm-hmm. documents, birth certificates mm-hmm. especially, you know, often are kept mm-hmm. at your parents' house. And so you're 24 years old and you're sort of at your first job and maybe you're living in another city. And, you know, mm-hmm. on registration day, you mm-hmm. can't call mom and dad and say, can you put it in the mail? I mean, how do you get a
exactly.
hold of that?
Exactly. So you, and again, this is where those affidavits come in. So for proving identity, age, or citizenship, you can sign what's called a qualified voter affidavit at the polls. Or if you're proving your domicile at the polls, you can sign what's called a sworn statement of domicile. Those are forms that are state issued that are in place basically to, you know, allow for kind of a backstop for qualified voters who may, as we were alluding to, have difficulty tracking down the kind of specific pieces of paperwork. And I also would advise that people take the time to review a checklist that we put together on our website at nhpr.org. If you go to the New Hampshire Voters Guide, what I did was I basically compiled, looking at a lot of different forms from the state, what they ask for each of those categories. So you can kind of go down that checklist and see, okay, maybe I have this, this, and this, and make your plan.
And if you're already registered, by the way, all you need to do is bring an ID. You don't need to bring,
yep.
you know, the birth certificate yep. or whatever. It's just for registration at the polls, which, again, we can't emphasize enough, Casey, New Hampshire still has same-day
yes,
registration.
Exactly.
All right, lots more of your questions in just a moment. Keep them coming in. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter is NHPR Exchange, and we'll be right back. Thank you. Granite Staters head to the polls on Tuesday, capping off a tumultuous midterm election season. I'm Laura Kanoy. Join me for live coverage of the races at the top of the ticket in New Hampshire and around the country. We'll also keep an eye on down-ticket results that could affect the balance of power in our state house. Our complete election night coverage begins at 7 Tuesday evening on NHPR and NHPR.org. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Poll workers from around New Hampshire are getting ready for voting tomorrow. NHPR spoke with several in Derry. Here's Pat Dowling. She's supervisor of the checklist on one of her favorite parts of the job.
And the thing that I really love is teenagers. I call them teenagers because they are. The day they turn 18 years old, a lot of them walk in here to register to vote. It's on their bucket list for turning 18.
That's Pat Dowling. She works at the polls in Derry. Today in The Exchange, the nuts and bolts of Election Day, your New Hampshire voting questions answered. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Casey McDermott is helping us out, investigative and data reporter for NHPR. She's done a ton of coverage on election law, voting requirements, campaign spending. A little bit later in the hour, we'll hear from people who've been covering what voters with particular needs might need tomorrow at the polls. We'll talk about Spanish-speaking voters and also voters with disabilities. Again, you can join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. And Casey, right back to our listeners. And Ken is in Portsmouth. Hi, Ken. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. Another great show, of course. Listen, my son just turned 18, and I'm going to take him with me tomorrow so he can register and so on and so forth. Now, can I go in the booth with him and show him the ups and downs and the ins and outs? Is that possible, or should we do that ahead of time?
My advice would be to ask your local poll worker, just to be clear. But my understanding is that unless, you know, the person that you're accompanying needs assistance, for example, because that person may have, you know, motor difficulties or things like that, that, you know, voting is meant to be private and independent. And but I would, that's a great question to ask your local poll workers.
Right.
And I believe we're going to address some of those other questions around assistance later
yes,
in the show.
Yes, we've got someone from the Disability Rights Center coming on in a couple minutes to talk about that. But we did, Ken, earlier talk about you absolutely can take notes in with mm-hmm. you. So, and there are sample ballots mm-hmm. that you can fill out. So
yeah.
you can kind of almost be there.
I would advise, yeah, that's a really good point that, you know, there are ballots that you can look at before you go into the voting booth. So if you wanted to take the time to talk to your son about, okay, here's who's on the ballot, here's how you fill it out, all of that information should either be available from, you know, for example, your town or city website or from the Secretary of State's office.
All right, Ken, thank you for the question. And good for you for taking your son. Let's go to Hinsdale next, where Lisa's on the air. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay.
I'm curious to know, in our town, all the years that I've been voting here, I've gone into the booth and they've gotten pencils attached to strings in order for us to mark our ballots.
Right.
But I'm concerned about the impermanence of pencil. Is there some sort of rule or regulation in the state of New Hampshire that guides the people at the polls to provide permanent markers for your ballots?
Interesting question. So concerned about the pencil could be erased? Is that what you're saying, Lisa?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Thank you for the call. Casey, do you know anything about this?
I don't know. That is, again, another question that I would advise asking your local poll worker at the polling place. And I think my understanding is that I think that as long as you know, completely fill in the circle next to the person that you're voting for, I do not think that it makes a difference if it's pen or pencil. But again, I would definitely advise double checking with the people who actually work at your polling place.
Sure. And in Concord anyway, and I don't know other mm-hmm. towns, but in Concord, you fill it out and then you put it in this big machine.
Yep.
So there's not really an opportunity for somebody to go at it with an eraser.
Right, right. I think, you know, and that's another reason why I would check at the local level, because some places do, you know, not every town in New Hampshire uses those machines.
Sure.
So some places hand count ballots, some places use those machines. Those machines are, you know, not networked. They're not connected to kind of the internet, and not, you know, New Hampshire's election systems, generally speaking, are more secure and less, you know, vulnerable to outside interference than, for example, places that rely on electronic voting or machines that are connected to some kind of larger network or larger system.
Well, that's been a big concern this year, you know, hacking by foreign entities. So I'm really glad she called with that question. And again, you spent some time in Derry, Casey, talking to poll workers there. And one of them, Denise Neal, did address this concern about hacking by foreign interests. She's worked in Derry's elections for 18 years. And Denise Neal says New Hampshire's more old-fashioned system is actually less vulnerable.
The fact that the machines that we have in New Hampshire, they have no access to Wi-Fi. They took all of that out of those machines. So there's no way they can be tampered with. And the numbers are printed out on a tape. So they're like 99% accurate.
Again, that's Denise Neal, who works in Derry's elections. Did you want to jump in, Casey?
Yeah, I just wanted to preface, just to give a little bit of context of why we're hearing from people in Derry right now. Derry is one of the largest towns in the state. And actually, in 2016, more ballots were cast there during the general election than in all of Coos County. So it is a really, really big lift
so
for election workers
to
get
everything.
Ready for election day. So I'm wrapping up a story separate from this conversation, just about kind of the behind the scenes work that goes into getting ready for an election. So that's why we decided to kind of focus in on Derry, because that was one of the places where that job was going to be, you know, really, it comes with a lot of challenges.
And I listened to a lot of your interviews, Casey, and as you said earlier, just the care and concern comes out from these folks who are doing a really big job. Are most of them volunteers?
I think a lot of them are, because, you know, towns have, for example, three supervisors of the checklist. There's a moderator, there's a clerk, but in many cases, they need other people, and it really depends on the resources that are available on a town-by-town level, whether or not those people are paid or whether or not they're just people who, you know, maybe their friend who's a supervisor of the checklist roped them in to kind of help out on election day. But as mentioned, I would say the vast majority of local election officials that I have spoken to in New Hampshire have a really, really deep belief in the importance of upholding election laws, but also, you know, upholding all eligible citizens' right to vote in New Hampshire, and feel really passionately about kind of their role in facilitating that, you know, small d democratic process.
Okay, and Casey, again, I really appreciate you being here, because we've got lots more questions from our listeners, so let's go to them. Michael says, you may have said this, but an ID is not required to vote if registered. You will have to sign an affidavit affirming your identity. So Michael's correct.
Right. Right. So if you're already registered and you're just going to the polling place that you have already voted in past years, then you will be asked to show an ID. But again, if you don't have that with you for whatever reason, but you are legally qualified to vote in the place that you're trying to vote, you can sign what's called a, you know, again, an affidavit saying that
I left my wallet at home, but I am who I say I
am. Yes, basically. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that question, Mike. I'm sure it's one that a lot of people have. Here's another one from Kathy. Please list specifically what types of proof you can bring to prove residency, e.g. an electric bill, Kathy asks.
Yep. So a, you know, an electric bill, a public utility bill, you know, a document. This comes up a lot in the case of students. So a document listing your on-campus address, or a note signed by a student ID. Often student IDs will not list a student's address because it changes year to year, or maybe semester to semester. So that would be a lot to kind of reprint every year. But what you can get is the state says that a note from like your resident assistant or a dorm supervisor that's signed. You can also get a receipt or some kind of confirmation. This is for people who might be a little bit more mobile, not necessarily college students specifically, but if you've gone through the official U.S. Postal Service change of address process and you have documentation that you've done that with your new address, as long as you're not using a P.O. box, the state says that that is valid. A written statement from someone who is on your rental agreement, if, for example, you know, you're doing like a kind of a subletting situation where you might not be on a lease, but someone else is on the lease and you live with them, the state says that if you get a signed document saying that you live at that address from someone else who's on the lease, that also is sufficient. Mortgage statement, property tax bill, there's a lot of different documents that the state has said can be used. One other caveat that I would say, though, is that a lot of this, as we've been mentioning, the election process is really run and put into practice at the local level. So your local supervisors of the checklist may have either, you know, other examples of things that they have deemed sufficient. For example, college towns sometimes come up with different, you know, different documents that they have stated, okay, we know a lot of college students have this, and this will make it, you know, smoother for them and also smoother for the poll workers when trying to help them register. This is, you know, may be different on a town by town basis, but there are kind of basic overarching sets of documents that the state has outlined.
Sure. And it would be impossible for you, Casey, to know the ins and outs of every single town in New Hampshire. So as with everything that you're saying, you know, good information, but please do check with your local supervisor.
Yeah, they can really be a useful resource. Again, I would recommend checking out that voter guide that we have on our website, because we tried to compile, you know, as many as we could of the possible types of documents that the state has outlined in different kind of advisories. But it's not an exhaustive list, and you may have questions that are specific to your local community.
Well, here's a question from Ed on Facebook that I think a lot of people probably have, Casey. Ed says, I move from one ward to another in Manchester. Can I just go to my new polling place? That's a great question, Ed.
I believe you will need to re-register in your new ward if you moved to a different ward. And again, that's something that the registrars at your polling place can help walk you through. But I would imagine that if you move to a different ward, your address changed, and therefore you may need to update some things around your voter registration.
Sure. And you would want to vote in that new ward because you have different representation in that ward, different local representation, even though obviously your congressional district
and at the state level as well, you may have a different state representative or something like that that you're voting for.
Well, Casey, we touched on this earlier, but I'd like to go into a little more detail. Voters who may have special needs at the polls, and joining us now is James Zegra. He's staff attorney for the Disability Rights Center. And James, thanks very much for being here. We appreciate it.
Oh, good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, as you well know, there's certain groups of people that might need extra help at the polls, mobility problems, maybe vision problems. What are your rights, first of all, as a voter with a disability?
So, you know, the Help Americans Vote Act, or HAVA, states that all voters have the right to cast a ballot privately and independently, and that includes voters with disabilities. So for folks with physical access, that means that they're able to get into the building. People that may have mobility impairments, you know, buildings around the state that, you know, our office understands that the polling places around the state are physically accessible. If they're not, you know, the voter has a right to state under oath to the moderator that they are unable to access the building, and the moderator has to bring out an absentee ballot for the voter on election day. For voters with visual issues or some sort of low vision or blindness, there are accessible voting machines in each polling location throughout the state that the Secretary of State's office has purchased to help comply with HAVA.
So here's a question that we got from someone on this point, James. This is from Laura in Barnstead, who says, my 72-year-old father lives in Rochester and voted for the first time in his life in 2016. Now he wants to vote on Tuesday, but he has glaucoma and cataracts, and I know he will struggle to see the ballot. Laura says, can I go into the booth with him to help? Can I read him the choices and fill it in for him? What should I know about helping him with his ballot at the polling place? And Laura, this is probably the case for a lot of folks. So thank you for the note. And what do you think, James?
Yeah, so that's absolutely the case where, you know, a person has a right to go into a polling place with either a friend or a family member, as long as they take an oath from the moderator stating that they're going to fill out the ballot in accordance with the voter's wishes. The other option, too, like I just said, is that the Secretary of State's office has deployed these accessible voting machines specifically for people that are blind or have visual impairments. And they're not just for folks who are blind or with visual impairments, but they're designed to make the ballot accessible for them. So it allows people to vote via headphones and via keyboard, and then it prints out the ballot once they're done.
Wow.
So they can make choices on their own.
I was going to ask you about that because there have been a lot of, you know, technological improvements to make life a little easier for folks with disabilities. So what other technical changes have you seen, James, that might make voting a little more simple?
Well, I think, you know, the accessible voting machine, it's something that our office has worked along with the Coalition of Blind Voters and the Secretary of State's office to make improvements to. It was deployed, I believe, for the first time in the 2016 presidential primary, and there were a lot of problems with it in terms of the synthetic voice. The text-to-speech was not very good.
Sure.
So a lot of that has improved, and you know, just The machine itself, I think, is going to be a big improvement over the old phone fax system that used to be used throughout the state.
Anything else that you want people to know, James?
Well, I think if they have an issue accessing the polling place, they can certainly contact the Secretary of State's office, the Attorney General's office, the Disability Rights Center with any sort of complaints. We're going to have attorneys throughout the state monitoring polling places and looking at different issues regarding accessibility.
And again, just to reiterate for Laura and probably a lot of other people, can she go in there to help her dad fill out the ballot?
Yes, as long as she, you know, it's a good idea to let the clerk know beforehand and to take the, and they have to take an oath before the moderator. But yes, Laura can go in and help her dad.
Okay. James, really good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's James Zegras, staff attorney for the Disability Rights Center. Now, a little bit later in the hour, we will talk about voters who might have language issues. NHPR has done some reporting on Spanish language speakers and how they can get help filling out their ballots. Lots more questions for you, Casey. John in Goffstown says, is it actually required that the voter verbally state their name and address when getting their ballot, or should the required ID suffice? John, I think I know what you're talking about. When I go to the polls, even though everybody knows me because I voted in the same place for 23 years, they do say name and address. They do verbally ask me as I show them the ID. John's wondering, does he have to say it?
I don't know that you actually have to speak it because my understanding is that that may actually present difficulties for example, people who have verbal difficulties or language difficulties. But you will be asked to show, prove in some way. So I believe that just showing, you know, a piece of paper or your ID or something like that will suffice. But, you know, again, I would double check with your local poll workers about that. And even if you just, you know, even if you just ask the people at your polling place, there are lots of people around who are able to answer those kinds of questions. But I don't think that you actually have to be able to verbally say, or you know, that you're going to be
hand
quizzed
them your driver's license
on what's on your driver's license.
Well, and we received several questions last week, Casey, about party affiliation, with people saying, how can I change my party registration before Tuesday? And the answer is, you don't need to. This
right.
is a general election. Mm-hmm. It's not a mm-hmm. primary where you're choosing party mm-hmm. nominees. Just super clarify mm-hmm. that for us, Casey. There's a lot of confusion last
yep,
week.
Yep. So the primary is basically to pick the nominee of each party. That happened in September. You walk into the booth on tomorrow, and you will have the full slate, regardless of whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Green Party, anything else. You will have the same ballot.
And you pick whoever you
yep.
want on that ballot.
Yep.
Everybody's on the same sheet. So I just want to super clarify that again, because there was some confusion last week. And the poll workers that you talked to in Derry, Casey said that's one of the number one
yep.
questions that they get. So clearing that up. We're trying to clear up your questions and concerns before voting day, or direct you to resources where you can find the answers. Now, coming up, we'll get a little more information about Spanish-speaking voters. All that's coming up in just a minute, so stay with us. Oh, This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow morning at 9, national midterm news as we continue with Morning Edition. The Exchange will be live at 7 p.m. for New Hampshire election night coverage. So that's all tomorrow on The Exchange. This hour, we're answering your questions about voting, the process, not the politics, the nuts and bolts of what you need to know before you go to the polls. So send us an email right now, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With us now is NHPR's Daniela Ali. She's been covering several specific aspects of voter information, including Spanish-speaking voters. And Daniela, it's really nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
So you produced a voter guide for Spanish-language speakers, completely in Spanish. What does it look like?
It's pretty much a translation of what Casey has put together in English. You know, having those Spanish resources is not just a quick Google search away for a lot of people, because there's a lot of state-specific information, as Casey's been hitting on with SB3, and just knowing the nitty-gritty details that you should know as you head to the polls.
Right. Voting is very state-specific. Voting is run by the states in this country. So any voter guide that you might find in Spanish nationally isn't really going to be that helpful here in New Hampshire.
Exactly. And some things that I have found in Spanish that relate to New Hampshire are not updated to what has happened in 2018. So they're related to the 2016 election, but not specific to the 2018 midterms.
So New Hampshire didn't have this until you did it, Daniela.
More or less. So New Hampshire is not federally obligated to translate any of its voter material into Spanish or any other language. There's a section of the Federal Voting Rights Act that kind of details that once a voting jurisdiction hits a certain threshold of like single language group, so it's either 10,000 people that speak that language or more, 5% of the voting population, and they have to meet a certain illiteracy rate that's higher than the national illiteracy rate. And then that voting jurisdiction is required to provide documents in whatever language. So it can be Cambodian, Vietnamese, Spanish, several Native American languages as well.
So that's interesting. So New Hampshire hasn't hit that threshold yet, so the state's not obligated to create this material.
Correct.
So you decide to go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
That's great. And again, we keep saying this all hour, but on our website, nhpr.org/exchange, or just nhpr.org, you can find it. So how do Spanish language speakers get the information they need, Daniela?
A lot of it's just through word of mouth, you know, knowing people who know the system and, you know, maybe asking at local stores, how do I figure this out? Who do I talk to? And where can I go? And actually, the Nashua City Clerk's Office does have someone who speaks Spanish on staff, as does the Manchester City's Clerk Office. But it's just a matter of people finding out that that person is there and could help them answer their questions in Spanish.
So tell us about some of the people you met, Daniela, doing this coverage of Spanish language voters, their questions, their concerns. What were some of the biggest questions that they had?
I met a couple of people who had moved recently to New Hampshire from Puerto Rico, and Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens, so they were pretty excited to vote. And a lot of questions just centered around, what do people stand for? Because, like, not a lot of candidates have information in Spanish on what the issues are and where they stand on those. And so people had a lot of questions about that, just questions about how do I register to vote? Like, we've been getting a lot of those today. And what do I need to bring? Where do I go? How do I find out where my polling place is? So just some of the basics, and also just how do I figure out what the candidates are wanting to do.
Well, in Puerto Rico is a very relevant point. We did a show, I think, 6 months ago about the hurricane and how the vast numbers of people from Puerto Rico have moved to this country, and a lot just can't go back because there's nothing there for them. So they're here, they're U.S. citizens. How do they go about the process of voting?
Right. And something that people have pointed out to me in the course of this reporting is they feel the political process here is different in terms of how politicians go out and campaign. You know, they feel more there. It's more of a festive atmosphere. That they always go to all these neighborhoods and just feel smaller and more intimate is what people have told me. And that's not, they don't get quite the same vibe. So figuring out that transition between what they're used to and what happens here has been hard.
Well, last question for you, Daniela. What about other voters whose first language isn't English? Maybe French speakers or Chinese people? What other sort of resources do people who don't speak English very well or as their first language, what are the resources are available for them?
So something that is available, as the person from the Disability Rights Center mentioned, is that they can get assistance at the poll. So if they go in with a family member who is very comfortable with English, that family member or friend can kind of interpret for them and say, hey, this person needs help, and then kind of go through the process of, you know, giving that oath to the moderator and then helping them fill out the ballot. And that's pretty much the assistance that they do have at this point, and just figuring out people who can maybe help them read a sample ballot and help translate some of that stuff. That's pretty much it.
Well, we've heard a lot about the sample ballot this morning, how, you know, it's there, you can fill it out, you can help somebody else fill it out, but they need to go in. So, Danielle, thank you very much. Just remind us one more time where people can find that Spanish language resource guide.
Yeah, people can head to nhpr.org. It is right at the top of the page underneath our English resource guide.
Okay. Danielle, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Danielle Ali, she's NHPR's Couch Fellow for Innovation. She's covered education and recently, as we heard, spoke with Spanish-speaking voters about the midterms. We're taking your questions today in the exchange about the technicalities of the voting process, setting politics aside and just trying to answer your questions on what you need to know before you go to the polls. You can join us 1-800-892-6477 or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Katie sent us a note, Casey. She says, while canvassing in Rochester on Saturday, I talked to a sweet man who tottered to the door and said he'd been too sick to get out for the last week, but really wants to vote on Tuesday. He was afraid that he couldn't physically get to the polls even if we got him a ride. Can he get an absentee ballot, or is there any way for him to vote? I have to say, this is the case with my mother. She's in the hospital. She absolutely will not be able to go to the polls on Tuesday. She's registered, but I was thinking about her. How is she going to be able to vote?
So you can request an absentee ballot up until they're not counted until, I believe, 5 p.m. on the day of the election. So if there's a way for you to get that ballot, you know, either from your clerk's office or from the, you know, for example, the scenario where someone may be able to get to the polling place but may not be able to physically get to the polls. I believe we heard earlier in the show that you can ask someone at the polls to bring ballot to you.
But if you're this man and my mother, who, again, can't physically get to the polls, even that would be too much. You can vote absentee?
I would believe that there is a way, but again, I would check with the local clerk's office because there may be differences in terms of, you know, the time that it takes to mail that ballot and get it back. But I think that it would be worth calling your local election official and just asking what is available to you. And I think that they would be able to answer the questions and be able to hopefully come up with a solution.
Okay. Sorry we couldn't answer that fully. But as Casey pointed out, it is really town by town, city by city in some instances. So good luck with that. Again, you can join us, nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Back to the phones, Casey. Cynthia's calling from Milford. Hi, Cynthia. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, my question has to do with college students who have a home in New Hampshire but may be in college in another state. How do they vote?
Yeah, boy, that's a tricky one. And we've been getting a lot of that leading up to the election. Casey, go ahead. I know you've done tons of coverage on this issue.
So basically right now, college students have the same rights as any other New Hampshire voter. So if you're legally qualified to vote in New Hampshire, you can vote in New Hampshire. As long as you haven't voted in another state. So, for example, one scenario might be that I think the caller was referencing you might be from New Hampshire, but maybe you're going to school,
let's say
in Michigan or something like that. Michigan may have different voting requirements, so perhaps you choose to vote by absentee in New Hampshire. You can do that as long as you follow all of the requirements for voting absentee and as long as you are not voting in two states or two jurisdictions in the same election. On the flip side of that, you, for example, let's say you're a student from Michigan who has come to school in New Hampshire. You can also vote in New Hampshire in person, even though you've come originally from Michigan, as long as, again, you followed all of the requirements and rules to vote in New Hampshire.
So let's say that college student from New Hampshire in school at UMichigan, he or she, at this point, it's too late for them to vote absentee, though, isn't it? Because there's all this, you know, forms that have to be sent back and
probably,
forth.
I think it probably would be in
ballot.
That case.
Yeah.
In terms
because it's
of,
done by traditional mail still.
Yes. So I believe that it would probably be too late for that specific scenario.
Okay. Thank you for the question. And let's go to Murray calling from Hanover. Hi, Murray, go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
I think I'm on the air.
Yes, you are, Murray. Go ahead. Welcome.
My wife and I both have passports. I have a New Hampshire driver's license. My wife is disabled and has no longer a driver's license, and we just moved to a new location. What does she need to bring to prove whatever we need to prove?
Murray, glad you called. And this is, you know, people's lives are fluid and, you know, everybody's not in the same place for.
I think I would bring whatever, you know, if you have any pieces of mail, if you have anything that lists the new place that you're living, if that's the place that you're designating as your domicile for voting purposes. So basically like the place that you want your home base to be for voting purposes. I would bring, if you have any documentation of that new address where you're living, with you to the polls. But if you don't have that documentation, you should still be able to vote. There are those forms that we've been referencing where you can go to your poll worker if you're trying to register at this new place and say, here's what I've got. If those don't satisfy the requirements, they should be able to give you a form that you can sign that will, you know, attest that you are legally eligible to vote in the place that you're trying to vote.
That's the affidavit that we keep talking about. And again, if you really are who you say you are and you really do live where you say you do, you'll be able to prove that at some point.
Yes.
In the meantime, that vote counts too.
Yeah. New Hampshire does not have provisional ballots, unlike some other states. So your ballot will be counted like anyone else's. And what will happen is that if you do sign those forms that we've been talking about, the state has a process for going through those forms after an election. So they'll send out, you know, postcards to check that someone, you know, lives at the place where they tried to register to vote. And they'll go through a process of investigating or checking for, you know, potential. They'll do the kind of follow up to make sure that there weren't any illegal votes or things like that after Election Day.
We've gotten lots and lots of questions, Casey, I'm sure you have as well, about these two constitutional amendment ballot questions. There's two of them, number one, number two. Is this unusual for New Hampshire to have these?
I don't think it's unusual necessarily, my understanding. I mean, full disclosure, I've only lived in New Hampshire for about 4 years at this point. But my understanding is that it is not necessarily unusual to see these kinds of questions on the ballot. But they do need to get, I believe, a 2/3 majority in the legislature to even be on the ballot in the first place. So there are hurdles that need to be passed before they can actually be up for a statewide vote.
So it's a pretty high hurdle for these to actually change the New Hampshire Constitution. Well, NHPR has done a ton of reporting on this. Rick Ganley, we here on The Exchange, but we still have received a lot of questions about this from listeners. We'd love to clear it up as much as possible. We got a Facebook comment from Elizabeth who says, I'm still not sure what the pros and cons are for question two, right to privacy. Would like to hear more on that, please. Elizabeth, for your information and everyone else, NHPR's Rick Ganley did sit down with UNH Law Professor John Grabe talking about these ballot questions. So here's what Professor Grabe had to say on constitutional ballot question two concerning government use of personal data. Now, right now, Grabe says the Constitution doesn't have a specific provision that talks about data in this way.
This is a statement saying, as a presumptive matter, the government doesn't have access to this information. Now, none of our constitutional rights are absolute, and there are all sorts of situations where we have constitutional rights, but they're qualified and they're limited. And I think if this were to be adopted, it would be a case-by-case, context-by-context evolution of the law led by the court system.
Led by the court system. So that is, again, John Grabe explaining ballot question two. We also got some comments about ballot question one. Now, this one concerns whether taxpayers have standing to make a complaint, basically, about the way their tax dollars are being spent. Let's hear Professor Grabe give his short explanation of the issues at hand with ballot question one.
If it were adopted, it would permit the taxpayer of any district within the state to bring a lawsuit if they believe that the government unit that they'd be suing is expending money in violation of law, be it the Constitution or be it some statutory law within the state. As things currently stand, the doctrine is that merely being a taxpayer and seeing your government spend money in what you believe to be an illegal way is not enough of an injury for you to be able to go to court and assert standing to bring a lawsuit. So this amendment, if adopted, would expand the capacity of the courts to really oversee the elected branches with respect to decisions they make with public funds.
So there you have it, Elizabeth, a little bit on ballot question number one and number two. And I know we keep directing people to the website, but there really is more detailed explanation of those constitutional amendment questions on our website, NHPR.org.
And I actually just wanted to clarify, too, that the ballot to amend the Constitution, you also need two-thirds of voters to vote
yes,
for that.
So two-thirds of the people and
it's a supermajority, I believe, in the legislature, and then
right.
two-thirds of voters.
Okay. Well, Casey, hard to believe. We've almost run out of time, and we have so many more questions just on the ins and outs and what to do. What's the most important message that you want to leave with our listeners before they head to the polls on Tuesday?
I would encourage them to do their homework in advance. So whether that means, you know, brushing up on the candidates, making use of the resources that we have at NHPR and through other local media to educate yourself about the candidates. But also, I would say it's really important to make sure that you do your homework about the actual voting process. And if you're not able to take the time to read over the guides that we have online, I would just reiterate, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, call your local election officials. Like we said, many of them want to serve as a resource for you and want to be able to help you to exercise your right to vote.
And they might be able to tell you, Casey, we've talked a lot about sample ballot, how that can be a great way for especially newer voters like the man with 18-year-old son. So would those local officials have those sample ballots for you to fill out today?
They should, yes.
Okay. And Casey, as if you haven't done enough, you're joining me tomorrow night on election night. So thank you very much for now, and we'll see you again tomorrow.
Thank you,
Casey. That's NHPR's Casey McDermott. Again, she's investigative and data reporter for us here at NHPR. She's done tons of coverage about election law. And one more time, you can find all sorts of extensive voter resources on our website, an explanation of those ballot measures we talked about. You can find Daniela's Spanish voter resources page and links to other resources to help you prepare for the midterms. It's all at nhpr.org/exchange. And this is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.